I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
Hey, John.
Yes?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
I love Doctor.
I love Doctor Who.
Oh my God, so do I.
That was good, Patrick. That's a good joke. I'm glad you got that going. I listened to we hear the opening theme song every week now, and I'm always surprised about that because that's probably the song that I've recorded that is probably played the most, and took about an hour and a half to write and record that whole thing, and I slapped it together real quick, whereas other things I've done in the past took a month of time anyway. But there you go with that. Patrick,
John, I'm super excited.
Yes.
One of my favorite people in the whole wide world is on the show today.
I know, mine too. And that is one Gail Carriger. Gail, thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, boys, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Gail is a longtime friend of the show. Longtime friend of the show.
Yes, I love you guys. I listen faithfully. It's always so nice. I feel like because we do socialize and stuff outside of this, that at conventions, that I get to reconnect with you. And I know it's a 2-part conversation or sometimes a 3-part, and I'm not actually involved, but I do yell at you occasionally while I'm in the car while I'm listening.
That's why we don't have voicemail.
Smart, very smart.
I will say, John, Gail is one of the people who, as a writer, has always inspired me. I love the way that she interacts with her fans. I love the time that she gives them when she sees them in person. And I think any up-and-coming writer needs to look at Gail as a model of what to do right.
Oh, thanks, Patrick. I love them. I am blessed with really awesome fans and readers, so that certainly helps. My books attract a certain kind of person, and it happens to be the kind of person I want to hang out with anyway. So it's all good.
Gail, and my wife, often before we are about to record, she'll be like, oh, who are you talking to today? And I said, Gail Carriger. And she said, like, oh, well, like, what does she write? And I was trying to explain your books, and I was doing a pretty horrible job because I read the first couple books in your series a couple years ago now. And I was like, well, it's kind of, so what I was thinking is maybe for some of our listeners who perhaps have not read your series of books, maybe you can give them a little,
little
intro to it. So if maybe people who aren't, so they can go and dig through your back catalog of books.
Sure. So essentially I write comedies of manners, but in a paranormal steampunk setting, or I guess a paranormal or steampunk now. I write a couple different series now, but most of the stuff that I'm known for is basically a steampunk world called Parasolverse. But essentially it's all comedies of manners. So they're really lighthearted and fun and occasionally quite slapstick and silly, with a little romance thrown in there. I have a lot of queer characters, and yeah, they're just fun. I guess I originally always described it as Jane Austen meets P.G. Woodhouse, only with dirigibles and vampires and werewolves thrown in. And now it's kind of everything but the kitchen soup. It keeps getting bigger. But yeah, that's basically what I write. And each one is kind of different. So sometimes I'll be exploring gothic tropes more. I've done kind of like Regency house party style straight up romances, only still in this kind of absurd setting. And I write a series now of gay or urban fantasy set in the Bay Area as well. So a bit of everything these days. I like to keep it fun.
Awesome. And the reason why Gail is on the show today is we're going to talk about her new podcast that she has.
Yes!
And we're going to talk about travel and book conventions and all sorts of things like that. So that's going to be our main focus today. Before we get on to that, I do want to, first of all, thank the people who back our podcast on Patreon. It's patreon.com/functionalnerds. Those people who give us some money every month, it really helps us put together a better show for you. So we are grateful to those people. And if you enjoy these chats with folks like Gail, consider becoming one of our backers. All you have to do is go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and you can find out how to do that. But let's get on to our picks of the week.
Yay!
Picks of the week.
So Gail, do you have a pick ready?
Oh, I so do. I can't. I'm so excited about this.
All right, lay it on us.
It's Killjoys. Have you guys seen this?
I have seen season one. I haven't kept up with it because I like it very much. That season that I watched, it is one of the few sci-fi shows that has. I bought the first season and watched it because I don't have cable, and it's not shown up any other place streaming. And it is streaming. Where is it streaming now?
It's on Prime, I think. It's either on Prime or Netflix.
Do you have to buy it, or is it
actually? The first two seasons are streaming, and you have to buy the third season currently.
Oh.
That and might change.
And you're not in Canada. You are in the United States, correct?
In the United States, yeah.
All right. Well, I have to look into that because I bought the first season, but never – I haven't kept up with the second two, and I liked it very much.
It only gets better. So for those of you who don't know what Killjoys is, basically it's a Canadian sci-fi, and it's really old school, traditional, fun, witty, adventure sci-fi. It's about – three bounty hunters, and I have described it for those who are in the know as Firefly meets Cleopatra 2525, which so it's basically like Firefly crossed with old like Xena or Hercules CW kind of a little bit. I'm a big fan of Canadian fun dramas. I was a huge La Femme Nikita, the USA TV show, also out of Canada.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I'm a huge fan. This, like that, is super stylish. I basically want every outfit that everybody wears, male or female, or gender bending. And yes, there's some gender bending going on, which is great. It's just awesome in that, like, I haven't felt this way about a sci-fi show since Battlestar Galactica belly flopped the landing and I was so like upset. But up until that moment, Battlestar Galactica had all of my passion and now it's all gone to Killjoys. I've been waiting for this for a while. It's just really fun. The dialogue's really beautifully well written. And joy of joys, they have three seasons, like we were just saying. Two of them are streaming, one of them you've got to buy, but frankly, like it's worth the $10 to buy the third season. And we just found out that they get two more seasons. So they're going to have an opportunity to hopefully close everything else really beautifully. One of my favorite things about it is that two of the characters, so the lead character and the sort of head a bounty hunter is a woman and her best friend is a man. And they aren't sexually interested in each other. And
no moonlighting.
I love it. Like, I'm like, oh, we get to see a friendship between heterosexual male and female, or I guess both of them are a little bit bi as well. And it's great. It's so much fun. And I don't feel like people know about it. So I really want to get the word out.
So John, this is one of the shows. So there's like three shows that launched on the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was Killjoys, Dark Matter, and The Magicians.
Mm-hmm.
And The Magicians and Dark Matter both put their first seasons on Netflix and Killjoys didn't. And right. I've never understood why.
I haven't either because I watched all three seasons of Dark Matter and I enjoyed that. I just finished watching the second season of The Magicians and enjoyed that too. And like I said, I bought the first – I am fine buying. The only reason sometimes I don't buy is not because I'm being cheap. It's because as we've talked about many, many times, there's so much. Like I have such a huge queue of other things that I can watch for free first that – there's not that much that I buy because of that, but maybe Gail's going to turn me around on this and I will go and buy those other
seasons. It's really worth it. It
absolutely.
Really, like the seconds, the seasons just get better and better. And I was a little disgruntled during the first season because I wanted more queer characters. It's something I always look for. And they totally develop Preet, who's one of their main queer characters. They develop his backstory, so you learn a lot more about him, and he gets a little romance. It's great. It's just it really just gets better. So I can't recommend it highly enough. I'm pretty sure. So I either saw it streaming on Prime for the first two seasons, or I got the DVDs from Netflix, which I know is super old school. But it's,
I don't think it's streaming for free anywhere, because I just kind of took a look and it's not on, like, yeah, you might have gotten it on DVDs. Like, I think you just do have to out and out buy it, which is, again, because I think I only, because I think it's like, what, like 10 episodes a season, 12 episodes a season, something like that.
Yeah. It is so possible that it was streaming and now it isn't anymore. That's also
absolutely, you know. Yes. But again, with these, especially the shorter seasons of certain shows, it ends up being, if it's $20, I don't even think I feel like I bought that first season for like $10 or $15.
Yeah, it's
bucks.
Real cheap. It's not that. Yeah. It's and maybe $14, but I'd.
Yeah. But that thing, it ends up being like $1.50 an episode. Is like, is $1.50 of a quality show that's 45 minutes long worth your time and your money? Yes, it is. So to me, it's like, that's kind of a nothing price for that sort of thing. And then you have it. So if you ever want to rewatch it, it's always there then. So that's what's kind of nice about that too.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to mention too is that the lead actor is it Hannah? Oh, I'm going to blank on her name now.
But, I don't know, but she's amazing.
She's awesome. So and she has a very small cameo in The Force Awakens. I don't know if you are aware of that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you've watched The Force Awakens, she is an Imperial, well, not an Imperial, a First Order folks, and she is just one of the people working, you know, the controls in the Starkiller base. You know, she's like, you know, the main weapon's ready to fire. Yeah, she's got like one line or two lines, and she's got her hair pulled back, so she's a little hard to
recognize. Yeah,
yeah, because she has like this, you know, long flowing hair usually that she has going on in Killjoys, and this it's you know, tied back tight in a bun. But yeah, Hannah John Kamen, I think is how you say her name. I might be pronouncing that wrong, but yes, that's it. Yep, she is in. She's credited as First Order Officer Number One.
Yeah. She's really and wonderful. Like, she's a super badass, and but you believe it. Like, sometimes Hollywood in particular will cast like kind of emaciated, real skinny little women as badasses, and I just don't believe it. It's one of the reasons I loved La Femme Nikita so much, is because Peter Wilson is like tough, and you can tell. I mean, you can see the muscles in her back, you know, like she is a strong woman, and when she is kicking people around, you can see it. And I feel like Dutch, who's the character that she plays in Killjoys, is the same way. Like, you really believe that she can, you know, kick some ass and take some names. So I love it. And I have a bit of a Ashmore Brothers thing as well, I'll totally admit too. And so it's lovely to see him there. He's the best friend. So.
Mm. Oh, and you know what's exciting? I'm looking at her Wikipedia page right now, and she looks like she, I don't know how big the roles are, but she's supposed to be in Ready Player One, and she's supposed to be in Ant-Man and the Wasp. I don't know. These might be small characters, but that's kind of cool that she's going to be in two more, you know, big time sci-fi movies.
That and is she British? I feel like she has a bit of an accent.
Yes, it says Hannah John Kamen is a British actress.
Yeah, I want her to play Alexia if we ever do. That's my, for those who don't know, that's my main character in my first series. I think she would be great in the role.
Okay, you listening out there?
Yeah. World, make this happen.
Yes.
So what are you guys' picks?
Patrick, why don't you go?
Well, first off, I did want to pick my favorite airport is Denver International Airport. I think it's the easiest one to get around.
Oh my God, are we going to have a fight, Patrick?
I'm just saying, I may have listened to your podcast.
My Hellmouth Airport. Oh.
Actually, John, I finally picked up a series of books that I've been meaning to read for quite some time, and I'm enjoying them immensely. And given that Gail is our guest, I figured that this is a nice little tie-in. It's do you know Philippa Ballantyne and T. Morris?
I do. I know them very well. They're very dear friends of mine.
The Ministry of Peculiar Events.
Yes, which is finished. Which has finally come. I think the last one just came out.
Yeah, I'm now on book two.
Excellent. Yeah, super fun. Like raw.
Loving them. Sci-fi. Loving them.
Good.
Loving
Yay.
Them. They are so good. And John, if you're into any of this kind of steampunky stuff, you need to go check these books out. They're just so much fun.
I will. We had them on the show a long time
ago.
We
have, yeah.
I think when they were maybe, were they like kickstarting one of those books? I feel like they had some sort of crowdfunding going on with one of them at one point.
So they did, I think they have kickstarted an anthology of tie-ins written by other people, which they might have been on for, which has now gone on to be several anthologies. And then I think they might have kickstarted the last two or three books in the series. Mm. So, yeah, they went indie for those.
I burned through the first two books, and now I'm trying to savor the third book. Mm-hmm. Because I know I only have so many left.
Yeah, I think there's maybe five total.
I think it's five, yeah. And I told them online that I finally got into it, and they were all excited. And
yeah, it's a great, so cool. It's really
they
fun.
Are. Yep, Eliza Braun and Wellington Books.
Nice.
And they are just wonderful characters, and it's a fantastic world. In the third book, they've gone over to America, and it's just so much fun. So definitely check them out.
Cool. My pick, I should have picked this a month ago. It is a book that I read one page of each day last year. And it's called The Daily Stoic. And it's 366 Meditations on Wisdom, Perseverance, and the Art of Living. I got into Stoic philosophy over the past 2 years or so. And this is literally just that. You read one page of it a day. And it starts with a quote by Marcus Aurelius or Seneca. And then the author of this book is Ryan Holiday, who I've picked some of his other books before. And he just sort of gives like a little bit of an interpretation and how it can apply to sort of our modern lives. And I found this was just a really good way to start the day. As I was eating breakfast, I would read whatever the day was and would think about that. And a lot of it is real common sense kind of stuff. But as most of us know, even with common sense things, we tend to forget these things in our daily lives. And it's sort of a way to sort of put your head on straight as you're starting the day. Because I think a lot of times we wake up anxious and sort of dreading the day. And again, a lot of it is, you know, the basic thing with Stoic philosophy is sort of like that serenity prayer, you know, let me just worry about the stuff I can actually control. And let's try not to worry about the stuff I can't control. And let's just start with that. And I just found this to be very helpful, so much so that I'm just kind of continuing. I started over in January and I'm going through it and reading it again every day. It's really good. So if you have any interest in this sort of thing and Stoic philosophy or just kind of good life advice stuff, it's I loved it. It's great. And it's become a daily part of my life. So it's just called The Daily Stoic, and it's by Ryan Holiday. And I would say definitely pick up the hard copy version of it, so that way you could sort of thumb through it. I don't know if this would work as well as an ebook. So there you go. That is my pick. The Daily Stoic.
Cool.
All right. Anyway, so I know that's a little bit of a heavy thing, but there you go.
I want to say, so I think that's awesome. I know that you've been doing a lot of stuff like that, mm-hmm. you know, just trying to kind of center yourself and keep things kind of flowing for you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's working. I mean, you've obviously had some positive stuff going on. And so it seems like it's working, and I'm proud of you for sticking with it.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Patrick. That means a lot. I appreciate that. Gail.
Yes.
So now let's get over to what
let's
you
go
have
back
gone
to this.
On.
Let's go back to this Hellmouth.
Yes.
You know what my Hellmouth airport is? So, LAX.
Well, let's launch the initial thing is that I so I travel a lot. I travel about 12 times a year. For events or retreats and stuff like that. And I developed a theory when I became a frequent flyer that every frequent flyer has something called a Hellmouth airport, which is an airport that just wants to keep you. Like if it's usually a hub airport, so you're going to fly through it a lot. And it just like always monkeys with your plans. For a lot of people, it's Chicago O'Hare. If you're somebody who has to get across country and you're going to need to do the Chicago flip, man, that is a kind of a universal hellmouth, but mine actually happens to be Denver. Every time I go through Denver, Denver wants to keep me, which is fine. I like Denver. I wouldn't mind staying in Denver, but usually I'm trying to get through Denver. So that's why I call it my hellmouth airport. So yours is LAX, Patrick.
Yes. I saw Bette Midler when she was in town. And this was a date thing. This was a couple years ago. And
you had a date with Bette Midler.
Nope. But the date night was Bette Midler.
Oh, got it.
And we went, and she was doing her, like, all these different characters. And one of the characters that she came on stage as was the character from the Disney film, the witches. You know what I'm talking about. The movie where she's one of the three
Hocus
witches.
Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus. Thank you.
Got it.
So she comes out on stage as that character.
Yep.
And the big joke is that she's going to curse the people of Denver because Denver has annoyed her, and she's going to curse us to have to drive 20 minutes to get to an airport for our lives.
Well, you could say that about Seattle or Portland or San Francisco. I mean,
it was hilarious.
So it's an hour's curse. But
I think if you have to compare DIA to LAX, LAX is going to be worse.
No, I don't agree. It depends. I mean, if you're Delta flying, then LAX is gonna be a problem for you. But I fly, you know, I fly American and I fly United quite a bit, and that means it's gonna be Denver, and Denver's gonna. And see, here is my thing with Denver: is you guys also have the so-called tornado shelters at the Denver airport. And I believe that those are actually the stairs down to the Hellmouth. Right there. It's even marked. So no, Denver's not so bad. There's some good food at Denver, which if you're going to be stranded somewhere, at least there's a great egg salad sandwich on the second floor.
Yeah, there we actually have real restaurants in there.
Yeah, it's
and then
good.
We have the crappy McDonald's where you pay $27 for a Big Mac.
Well, you don't, because no one should eat a burger while they're traveling. And this is some of the stuff that's on my podcast.
Yes.
So
and who's your partner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically I'm a super organized kind of OCD person. And because I was traveling so much, I just started to develop all of these travel hacks, like how to pack for the different places I'm going. And I learned all of these things about the different chain hotels that I'm traveling, like which ones smell good and which ones smell bad, you know? And I just got this sort of wealth of stuff in my brain about traveling, and I love it. I love talking about it. And then I met my friend Piper, who's a fellow author, but she actually travels for her day job. So she travels even more than I do. And we just can talk forever on the subject. And basically we were like, well, we need to do a podcast about travel hacks and different tips and tricks, you know, like how to pack food and you pack differently for a convention versus like a presentation and stuff like that. So we started a podcast. It's called 20 Minute Delay. And that's 20, the number 20. And yeah, it's everywhere. If you want to give us a try, it's not too long. We're only about half an hour usually, sometimes a little longer, sometimes a little less. And we just each day we pick a topic and we talk about travel.
I don't know if you know this or not, Gail, but for 2 years, from 99 to like the end of 2001, I traveled for work.
So you know it too. Yeah, we should get you on and interview Patrick.
The thing is that, but when I traveled, it was different because it was before 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
And well, I remember driving from Knoxville to Nashville and had like a 10 a.m. flight or something. And I drove to Nashville. I pull into the parking lot. I grab my roller bag and my computer bag. I walk into the airport and I walk right onto the plane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I traveled quite a bit as well because I was an archaeologist before I was an author. So I would do a lot of international traveling before 9/11 as well in my previous career. And yeah, those were the days.
How did you get the whip on the plane?
Uh-huh. Actually, they don't care. A whip is not a weapon.
I had a kid in my school this week that we had a dress as your favorite movie day, and he combined he had like a Star Wars shirt and a fedora on, and he was like, you know, a mashup of Han Solo and Indiana Jones, and he
and or your good. Standard convention goer.
Yes, exactly. He's a convention goer in training. Yeah,
there's a meme that's it's a picture of a bar, and there's three versions of Harrison Ford in there, and it's his Blade Runner, Han Solo, and Indiana Jones. And it says, you know, a bounty hunter, a smuggler, and an archaeologist walk into a bar.
The archaeologist can still drink them all under the table.
Well, I've listened to a couple episodes of the podcast already, and I'm loving it. I think it's hilarious. Aww, you guys have a great rapport.
Yes, we do. We're really good friends, and we natter, and we occasionally we'll talk over each other, but we try.
And it doesn't surprise me that you have a podcast. It only surprised me how long it took you to start one.
I know. Well, I needed a couple of things, I think. I needed someone who could produce it for me. And so we have a producer, Matt, who stepped up to the plate for it. And then I needed to find someone who could edit it for me. Cause I just was like, I'm not capable of taking on those skills right now. So we found those two people, and then I really wanted basically a co-host. I wanted the same kind of thing that you guys have on this one. And then I met Piper, and I was like, Piper, let's do it. And she jumped right in. So yeah, we have a lot of fun, and yeah, we share horror stories, but mostly it's about like trying to help everybody else cope with travel, because it's become so complicated now after 9/11 that we have all of these hacks that we were just like, yeah, well, you do this when you have to take a neck pillow with you, and Piper and I are like, of course you do that, but then, you know, you run into so many people at the airport who have their neck pillow like strapped to the back of their backpack, and we're like, no, you can't do that because United will get really mad at you, that kind of thing.
So what's an example of a hack?
Well, we're big kit people, and I cannot recommend this highly enough, which is if you even if you travel only a half a dozen or less times a year for something like a convention, if you're a convention goer, I would really recommend dividing the things that you always take into kits. And I would say have double of certain things. So for example, I have a kit that always goes next to my bed whenever I'm in a hotel. And that has all of the things that I always need when I am going to be away or sleeping, and also the things that I need when I sleep at home. So, you know, my preferred eye mask and, any medication that I need for sleep or for allergies or anything like that, and earplugs. So, and that just always lives in my sleep kit. And then that kit, I just pick it up and pack it every time I need it. Then I also have kits for the plane, which live in my tote. That's my under seat bag. And those are the things that I always use on a plane, like a charging kit for all of my devices. And the key with those kits is to pick little baggies that are different textures. So you can reach under the seat in front of you and just grope into your bag and feel which one you need. So like my charging kit is one of those kind of neoprene baggies. So it has a little protective thickness to it, but it also has a very specific texture. Whereas my bag that has like chapstick and skin cream and stuff like that I might need for a flight that's a little bit longer because my skin's getting dry, that one is kind of like a slightly metallic grid texture. So I can just reach into my tote and I don't even have to pull it out or look into it. I can just do it by feel and pick out whichever one I need. So that's one of my biggest things.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Because one of the things that bothers me now is that when I was a teenager and I was traveling, I had a backpack that had one pocket. Like, I mean, it just had like one section.
Yeah.
And all my shit went in that section.
And then you had to.
And it wasn't folded. Yeah. It wasn't folded, or I just threw everything in there, and that's all I needed. And now I have like these complicated, multi-tiered, leveled kind of backpacks with 10 different little sections, and my laptop goes here, and my e-reader goes here, and my blah blah blah. And it's just travel is stressful when you're an adult.
Yes, it is, and I guess that's part of our thing is to try and like help you make it less stressful. I mean, I'm fine traveling now. Like I'm so relaxed about it because I just have all of my systems in place and I just like bop in. I'm like, okay, I got to boil half a dozen hard-boiled eggs. That's one of my big things for traveling is egg protein. It's like, I just take my hard-boiled eggs with me and I know that I'll have protein because the one thing you really struggle to get at airports or on planes is good protein. So, you know, that kind of thing. And I just like have my little systems in place and do my thing. And it's really way less stressful. So, you know, and we talk about like whether we have airline loyalty, credit card, like we talk about everything to do with traveling and how we choose and plan, and we disagree. Like Piper, for example, is a backpack person, and mm-hmm. I really, really loathe backpacks when traveling. Like I have been beamed in the head so many times by what I call the backpack Sasquatch, which is usually a larger dude carrying a backpack.
I apologize for that.
Yes, Patrick, because you happen to be at my head level, and I'm an aisle seat person, so I get beamed by a backpack.
Oh, no.
So, but Piper's a backpack girl. She always travels with one. So she likes having her hands free. You know, I understand. So we get into arguments all the time, too. So it's not like there's only one way to do it, because clearly we disagree.
I've not traveled nearly as much as the two of you. When we were doing conventions more, I did. And
you did two conventions. How do you justify that as when we were doing conventions?
Well, we did, but then well, no, but then I did a bunch by myself where I went and played.
Oh, okay.
Well.
Yeah, locally.
Well, no, and I went to FenCon and Nerdtacular and a couple of those too. So it wasn't very many, you know. But I really like traveling. Now, again, I did it so infrequently that I realized I could see how this could get old pretty fast if you're doing it all the time.
Yeah.
But I found for me it was to travel kind of as light as possible.
Yes.
Because that alleviates a lot of the stress of it. And even when I would perform and I had to bring my guitar, I was able to get it as a carry-on some of the time, but honestly, in the end, because that was the advice I got from musician friends, is like, oh no, you got to carry it on, like don't check it, and because yeah, I guess they can damage it if they're checking it, and that's true. And there's some tricks you could take, you know, you could put some foam in your case and you know slack the guitar string so there's not as much tension on it and all that. But I just found actually taking it on board was stressful because I would take it to the gate and I'd be like, is it going to get on or no? Are they going to give me trouble about this or no? And,
yeah.
You know, so I just found in the end, I'm just like, you know what? I'll just check it. It's fine. Like whatever it'll, I mean, then you have to deal with the stress of getting it off the baggage claim. But the times I didn't bring a guitar and I just had like one little bag, it was great. It was just like, oh, I'm just getting on. I'm chilling out and reading. It's good.
My only thing is, and here's a DIA horror story. Like I used to check my guitar in a hard shell case that was locked, and that was fine until my cousin came to Denver for a visit, and he brought his like $2,000 12 string Takamine, and he checked it, got to the house, opened the case, and the neck was snapped in half.
Oh God. See, that's the horror story.
That's the horror story, and that's checking. When I stopped checking my bags. Yeah,
I rarely check, but I will say as a travel hacker tip for conventions, if you are someone who doesn't absolutely have to have their own guitar with you, one of the things you can do is call out to the con and be like, "Anybody else bringing a guitar? I could borrow for a couple of sets or something," and just have a local person who's driving. Like loan you a guitar. I have a good friend who does that and just has someone else bring a guitar to anything that he might need it for.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And obviously I've read a million interviews with various musicians who are at much higher levels. And I think nowadays the way a lot of musicians tour and perform, a lot of it is, it's not, most people are not at the, you know, I'm getting in a touring van and or a touring bus and being on tour for 6 months, that kind of travel and performing, you know, unless you're like the elite hugest acts, doesn't really exist. It's more flyaway dates where it's, you know, they go and they are in a area for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. They do two or three shows and then they fly back to wherever they live. And so I've read a lot about how music manufacturers have had to develop different kinds of devices and things that are more travel friendly, because they'll have amps there for the musicians, yes. But they'll have like there's certain kinds of pedals and other kinds of gear that they can bring in a carry-on so they can get their sound through anything.
Yes.
And it's interesting because that's sort of a necessity thing, because it's like, yeah, we're not having a touring van where we have all this stuff loaded. It's like, what can I bring on the plane?
Yeah.
And that's an interesting wrinkle to all this too.
I'm good friends with the musician Unwoman, and she's a cellist, and of course the old rule with a cellist is that you just had to buy a ticket for your cello to sit next to you. That was the only way to do it. And then, of course, there's always the chance that they're going to, you know, bump that ticket out. But she travels with a travel cello, which is like a sort of an electric cello that holds. It's a very interesting little device. But I have actually roomed with the cello on several occasions. The cello's name is Stephanie. Stephanie and I have shared a room because I always always get a room in the hotel that's closest to a convention. And so whereas Erica, Unwoman, she usually stays with friends in the area. So she just leaves the cello with me and I give her an extra key to my room so that she doesn't have to truck it back and forth.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, cellos are, that's a rough travel.
Yeah,
I had a professor in college when I took a strings methods course, and when he was talking about how one goes about buying a cello, he's like, you have to kind of look at it like you're getting a loan for buying a house. Like that, like if you get one of those really,
really fancy ones,
like the ones that are, you know, 100 years old, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's like, it's, yeah, that's a commitment.
It is.
I don't know if you remember my first podcasting mic, John, but when we went to World Fantasy in wherever it was, I can't remember at this point.
Columbus, Ohio.
I had this podcasting setup and took it there. Because we were going to record some stuff while we were there, and I had my microphone, which sat on a old school kind of style ceramic base, this round, just thick, heavy round disc. And when I left Denver, everything was fine, and we got to World Fantasy, and we did all our recording and everything. And then when I was trying to fly out, I got pulled aside and surrounded by people.
No.
Because I had a dense, thick, unidentified ceramic disc in my bag that they couldn't figure out what it was. They thought it was like an explosive. And I had to explain to them. I'm like, oh, that's the base for my microphone stand. Because it was just this little one. And the pole that the mic sat on was only maybe 7 inches long, right? And I had to explain it to them. I'm like, if you guys will let me, I'll show you how it all goes together. And they're like, no. Well, you know, let us work on this first and then we'll talk. And I'm like, okay. I'm just kind of sitting there waiting. Finally, they kind of brought everything over and I showed them how to, you know, you screw the pole in, then you put the microphone on, you tighten that. I said, here, see, it's a microphone.
Yeah, it's funny. So I'm from California. And my favorite plain food and a food that I pretty much always take no matter what, because it also keeps well and is a good kind of snack food for a convention, because you're never sure when you're going to be able to eat at a convention, is a burrito. So I always travel with a burrito. And the Oakland Airport TSA now know me as the burrito girl, because that's my local airport. And they're like, oh, hello, burrito girl. So I always travel with this big old Hulk on burrito.
Now, Gail, it sounds like this podcast that you're doing now came up very organically and it from your interests. And I know it's, you just started it recently, but I think about this with, I think podcasting is such a good medium, especially for authors, because I think when people listen to you, and I'm not sure how frequently are you putting shows out?
I guess we have about 8 out now, and we started once a week and we're now defaulting to once every 2 weeks.
Which I think that's a good, I think once a week or once every 2 weeks is kind of a good schedule. I think that's good for lots of people. But what I was going to say is that I have found from certain podcasts that I listen to, and not necessarily genre authors, but people that write nonfiction books as well, just through listening to podcasts, what ends up happening for me as a listener is I feel like I really know those people then, you know, when their voice is in your head on a weekly or, you know, biweekly basis. Then when they have books that come out, I just don't even think about buying them or not. I'm just like, oh, they have a new book. Let me go get it. And I know that's maybe you don't have some big grand.
Damn, that hasn't been my luck.
Well, sorry, Patrick. But I know that you probably don't have some grand marketing plan around that. And I know it's probably too early to see if that has any effect on book sales. But has that been at all in your mind in terms of launching this podcast?
Honestly, not really. Because we, although Piper and I are both writers, we actually talk about the writing stuff very little. I mean, we will talk about conventions and presentations and I think we have an episode coming up where we talk about like what we pack as authors for conventions, like our author kit bags. But we're just talking about the travel, and we kind of want the podcast to appeal to business travelers like Piper who travel for work, as well as event travelers like me who travel for work, but with a different kind of event, and musicians and stuff like that. So we don't really, in fact, I just made a note that we probably should remember to occasionally promo our books, but we actually don't do it that much, if at all. And part of that is the way we record, and this is like the secret behind the magic, but we drop up 3 episodes at once. So we will do a longer recording session where we'll just record 3 at once. And so we are never quite sure when the actual episode is going to release. And we also backfill quite a bit because we do travel so much. So we have to like leave ourselves windows where we're like, well, we may not be able to get to record this month. So because we're both just doing too much traveling. And so we what we recorded, you know, 2 or 3 months ago is what's actually about to air. So we actually don't have really the opportunity to kind of promo our stuff. We're really doing it just because we're both dorks about this subject and we just want to talk about it and kind of pay it forward and share the love of the things we've figured out. So that's kind of it.
So John and I didn't invent that, but we've gone to that too. So we're doing 3 or 4 usually a day when we record. So we're trying to do like the entire month. Now we're splitting it a little bit. I honestly believe that writing excuses.
Yeah.
Started
they
that
do
because
that.
They will do like a whole season.
Yep. Yeah. They will fly whoever their guest is out. And then they'll be in the same room recording and they'll do the whole season, but they're a really short podcast because they're like 15 minutes or something. Yeah. Piper was their guest for a couple of, you know, like half a season or something, for a while there. So, so she knows exactly how they work. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Because they're all in the same room when they do it.
Yes.
And I don't think they all live in the same city at this point. So I think that's what they do. They get together. They, you know, maybe
sometimes
it's like
at a convention, sometimes at
they do the special
house
ones as well, which are the little convention episodes where someone can come in. You can hear the crowd in the background, or they'll do, I don't know if they record on the Writing Excuses cruise, but maybe they do that as well.
You know, Gail, you were saying that you don't really talk about your books, but I think honestly, that's sort of the key, is to not be there promoting your books. Like you should let people know about it for sure. But I think that's one of the reasons why when I mention certain people that I buy their books, they're really not talking about their books on their pod. They have a specific subject that they are talking about, and I just like them.
Yeah.
And I think that's how it works.
I think that's definitely the case with nonfiction in particular. Mm-hmm. Like, I really enjoy Joanna Penn's podcast. I don't listen to every episode. I kind of pick most of my nonfiction. I'll pick and choose the subject. So the show notes are really important, at least for me, because I'll just take a look at it and be like, am I even interested in this podcast, this episode? But I bought her nonfiction book partly just because I wanted to support her. But she also writes fiction, but she writes fiction that doesn't particularly interest me. So I'm not really inclined to buy her fiction, but I bought her nonfiction. So I think it definitely with podcasts can help if you have a nonfiction book out there. Like I said, Piper and I started it really not really as a promotional thing, more just for fun.
I'm sorry, Gal, I could cut you off.
All I was going to say is that I do get it is very funny because at least initially in my career, you know, a decade ago now, when I was first doing events, often people would come up to me and say, I had no idea what you sounded like. I expected you to have an English accent or whatever, because I write British, mostly British set stuff. And so now they do get that. So they do, people do now get my voice in their ear, you know, so they know what I sound like. And I also get people coming up to me after events that they're like, oh, I'm so glad I know you know, what your intonations are like, so I can hear that kind of in my head when I'm reading your books. Because I don't do readings ever. So yeah, so maybe the podcast is helping with that.
The lecturer in Gale doesn't do readings.
Yeah, I don't.
Just to teach.
I do. I like to.
Which is good. Yeah. I like it.
I love doing panels. I like just talking. I'm really comfortable in front of a crowd too. So I'm one of those authors. There aren't a lot of us.
Well, yeah. That comes from the classroom though, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. For those who don't know, I used to be an archaeologist, and I also used to teach university archaeology. So I'm pretty comfortable standing up in front of about 300 people and boring them to tears.
Now, well, you know, and to bring it back to what you were just talking about, we kind of give that advice to some of our guests of just, you know, kind of the best thing is to not talk too much about your book, because we've had people come on and it's fine. We've liked everybody we've ever had on the show, but sometimes they always keep bringing whatever we're talking about back to the book and back to promoting. And I think that is not the best strategy. No. I don't think so. I think kind of the best thing you can do is like mention you got a book out in the beginning and mention it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a tactic, John. It's a tactic, John. It's something that salespeople use. John, when they're trying to build rapport with you, John.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, I was just telling him, like, just be cool. If you're cool, like, that's gonna make people wanna. Because I just always look at it from the point of view as a listener/consumer.
Yeah.
Is that the book that I've bought after I've heard people on podcasts are the people that basically almost talk nothing about it. Yeah. And just, I'm like, that person seemed cool.
Well, the other thing is that fiction is incredibly subjective. Like,
yes.
I never get upset if somebody doesn't like my books. I'm just like, okay, well, it wasn't for you, right? Like, I'm a voracious reader, like hundreds of books a year, kind of voracious reader, but I'm very particular about what I read, like really particular. So I just like, there are going to be cases where I really like the person. I really adore the person, but I'm just like not interested in the type of genre. I read genre exclusively, and I'm not interested in the type of genre the subgenre that they write. And you know, like, I guess I'm also a voracious podcast consumer, and I just kind of want to be entertained, and I want the interview to be fun. And, you know, sometimes you just feel like whatever it is that's being shilled is being kind of forced down your throat. So
when you're recording the podcast, you get that too.
That's
because
true.
There's been times, you know, that's something that John and I have always tried to do here. It's what I always try to do on SF Signal. I always used to tell people before I started recording, you know, this is about having fun and just having a good conversation. You know, don't worry about it. I'm not going to ask you gotcha questions. There's not going to be anything uncomfortable. We're just going to have a good conversation.
Yeah.
And we've always tried to do that. And when you're recording that podcast, you can tell when that person is uncomfortable and it's not going to be good.
Well, and I mean, in defense of authors in particular, we do often tend to be kind of shy and awkward and not really comfortable. And, you know, you have your publicist, if you're a traditional author, breathing down your neck and telling you, don't forget to mention the book, you know. You know, sometimes it's just awkwardness.
and 9 times out of 10 though, at the end of it, they're like, wow, I didn't know what that was going to be. That was so much fun.
That's the coolest part. It is fun when you get someone on a podcast who, like, there, I feel like there are a couple of different kinds of guests as someone who listens to podcasts a lot. Like, there are people who get on the podcast and kind of are like, what is this podcast thing? But then just dive whole hog into it. And that's really fun because it's kind of like watching somebody discover the magic of podcasting that you've known about. And you're like, oh, come to our fold. Yes. Yes. And then you get people who are big fans of podcasts. And so they kind of know the drill and they're like happy to jump in, and they have, you know, listened to the podcast ahead of time, so they're prepared for the style and all that sort of stuff. And then you get people who are just nervous about being interviewed at all, and they don't understand. I mean, we've kind of drifted a little, but I, for example, gave up. I used to be a huge Nerdist podcast fan. I loved them, particularly the Hostful episodes. But I've given up listening to them because they got so big and they just started interviewing like A-list Hollywood actors. And those interviewees had no idea about, you know, the Nerdist brand or the Nerdist style, and they just came on to sort of shill a movie, and it just, it was just not fun for me as a podcast fan to listen to. And so I sort of gave it up, and I feel like that is, you know, that's going to be the hardest interview to me, in my mind.
Well, and the problem with those kinds of things is that you can watch or listen to that interview at 10 different places because it's the exact same interview.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're going to give the same interview to the Nerdist that they are going to give to, you know, the Late Show. And that's not why you listen to the Nerdist. You listen to the Nerdist to hear people nerd out about something. And I want to hear, you know, if like, I really want to hear the episode where What's His Bucket from those stupid car chase movies, Fast and Furious movies, talks about Magic the Gathering, because I know he's a Magic the Gathering player, and I want to hear him become all nerdy about it. But I've not heard that podcast yet, you know? Why doesn't the Nerdist do that?
Exactly.
Yeah, I gave up on that one a long time. I was a huge fan.
Yeah, me too. Huge. I went and saw them live. Yeah, it's that. But that kind of happens sometimes when podcasts get too big. And it's like, I feel like, kind of like talking about podcasting now instead of anything else, but I feel like Serial really changed things. I mean, in terms of, we got a whole bunch of new listeners to the world of podcasting, but those super high production value like Radiolab
Welcome to,
and 99% Invisible, like, you get, they were there, but then Serial came along and really evolved that, and now we've got, you know, stables of podcasts that I like Gimlet Media, for example. But it's a different kind of podcast than what you guys have, which is this kind of casual chatty podcast, which was the reason I first got into it. So there are, I guess all I'm saying is I suppose there must be fans who really want basically the podcast version of The Late Show. But I happen to just not be one of those fans.
Yeah. I'm sort of with you. I'm sort of in the same way. Well, we're coming to the end here. And I wanted you, Gail, you'd mentioned a little while ago about how genre, or not genre, but just fiction in general is very subjective. And I came across a great quote over the past week that I thought you might relate to. And it's by Dita Von Teese. it was just in this one book I was reading. They had this quote. So she's a burlesque performer.
Yes, fashion icon.
Yes, I figured you might know who she is.
I do.
But her quote is in line with what you were just saying, which was, you may have the ripest, juiciest peach, but you're still going to meet people who don't like peaches.
Yes.
So I thought that was a great quote, because it's like,
wonderful.
Yeah, it might not be for you. So I thought that was something that you would appreciate. And I think that's like, you got to keep that in mind sometimes. Like, look, you just may not have what people are looking for, or certain people are looking for.
It's a great, like, honestly, it's a great attitude to have if you're any kind of creative artist, because you have to realize if you put, you know, your heart and your passion out there on the page or in music or whatever form it is that you're taking, there are going to be people who it's not for them. And that's okay. You know, that's fine, because there are definitely things that are not for me, you know, like, I don't like Brussels sprouts, and you can wrap bacon around that Brussels sprout. I'm sorry. I'm still not going to like the Brussels sprout, you know? And so I feel like it's a really good attitude to take in every aspect of career choice. If you're a creative, including things like marketing, like, you can't, if you're going to go forth and try to market your book to the world, you can't market it to everybody, because it isn't going to be for everybody. Nothing really is. You know, there are people out there who don't like Harry Potter, right? So you just have to kind of accept that's the way the world works, and it's the way with podcasts, you know. So to bring it back around to 20-minute delay, like, give it a try, and if you don't like it, that's fine, you know, right? Or if you don't travel, that's fine. Don't listen. It's good. It's cool.
I don't want to open the patient for the third time, but in our last episode, we kind of had a conversation about this, where there was a book that a lot of people loved that I absolutely did not love, And unfortunately, the author took that personally.
Oh, see, that's really, really rough. Because
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have so many author friends because I travel to conventions a lot. And one of the reasons I travel to conventions as much as I do as an author is because most of the time I'm writing by myself, and I really love the water cooler moments of being at conventions where I get to, you know, not just meet my fans, but also meet my fellow authors. And I don't read a lot of their stuff. And some of them have things that really trigger me. Like, you know, there are certain levels of violence that I don't like to read. And so I you know, many a time I have gone to an author and just been like, I'm sorry, I'm probably never going to read your books because they just strike me as way too violent. And they're not going to read mine, and we can still be really good friends. That's cool.
Yeah.
But that is rough. If, I mean, don't go up to an author or a musician or anything and say, well, I'm sorry, I really don't like your stuff. I mean, don't do that, because what kind of response could they have? But it's perfectly okay to just be like, it's not for me. And because any professional should understand that, I feel.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So Gail's podcast, 20-minute delay. Go and check it out if that sounds interesting to you.
And you have
Romancing the Werewolf.
The book. Yes. Book. But I should say that John's music is on that podcast. So
John's music. Yes.
Yes. Yes. We use Steampunk Girl because Piper and I both wrote steampunk fiction. So and there's a little bit of that song that talks about traveling. So we use that as our intro outro music. So maybe awesome. Eventually that song, John, will get played more than.
You know, someone made a really good online friend of mine made a really cool video of that. I don't know if you of the Steampunk Girl song. I don't know if you saw
I think
it.
It's I like have. Sort of it's this. Fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, he entered it into like this competition, and yeah. So anyway, that's something to check out too. Well, and I appreciate you using that, and I'm glad it fits the theme of your podcast and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's great. It's awesome. Yeah, so that's the podcast, 20-minute delay. And yeah, my most recent book is called Romancing the Werewolf. And it's it's a Christmas romance with possible child sacrifice featuring Victorian dandy werewolves. So, and they're gay. So there you go.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, that's that's everyone's jumping on that bandwagon nowadays. So there you go. Well, that's awesome, Gail. And like, go to GailCarriger.com. You can get all of the information about her books, and you can follow her on Twitter and stuff.
Do they have a rough relationship? Rough?
Har, har, har.
Har, har, har. Yeah, that's rough. Gail, before we go, is there any events you've talked so much about going to conventions, or what are some ones that may be coming up for you that people can go and check you out?
I'm going to be at the Tucson Festival of Books this year, and I will also be at Phoenix Comic Con. Those are both, obviously both in Arizona. And then I'm going to be at Denver's RWA Nationals, and I will be doing an event in Denver because I have a book launch at the same week. So probably, yes, at Tattered Cover. So you can come out and catch me there.
Do you know which one? I know they move you around.
Yeah, I do know which one, but they gave it to me in slang Denver terms, so I don't have a memory for it.
Okay,
probably not the downtown one. I am never at the downtown one. I'm usually at.
You think it's the one on Colfax?
It's not Colfax. It's the third, the new.
Oh,
it's the new.
Okay, location. Okay, gotcha. So it's I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Sorry. So I'm at
Aspen Grove.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's that one, but it'll be on the website, and I will talk about it always closer to the actual time that I'm out there. And then I will also be at Worldcon in San Jose, which I am beyond excited about because it's local for me, so I can wear all of my shoes. I will have so many outfits. I'm very excited.
Nice. All right. So everyone go and check all that out. If you dig the show, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything you want to end with?
Well, the last thing, and I don't know if I've said this publicly or not, but I wanted to thank Gail for introducing me to Beyond the Trope.
Yay!
They have become great local friends, Giles, Emmer, Michelle, and Emily.
They're charming and adorable and wonderful, and I love them.
Yes. And Giles even comes over now for game night.
Yay! Yay! You adopted so, them. Good for you, Patrick.
I do joke that I'm the fifth Beatle.
That's awesome.
And if you are looking for another fun podcast, check out Beyond the Trope podcast. They're just great, great kids. Love them.
They are. They're awesome. The next generation of podcasters. So go give them a listen. They're so cute.
Nice. All right, everybody. Well, have a great week and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.